to welcome everybody. My name is Jenna Christensen. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the founder of Women at Work. One of the reasons, or really the reason, I wanted to start this group was to create a safe space for women to come together and share their challenges and their victories. So what we do, for those of you who don't know or this is your first time, I curate conversations like this one tonight. We do them every other month, and they are centered around topics that either I'm struggling with, you know, in my career, or things that I see my colleagues struggling with. So I really thank you all for being here. I want to introduce three very special people, my team. Amanda Neistat, Marissa Sandby, and Guitar Bandescape, who's right here. I just want to let everyone know, if anyone has any questions afterwards, you want to learn more about how to get involved or become a member, just come and find one of us afterwards. So I'm really excited about this conversation and to have Tony here tonight. I think this talk about confidence is really important. But before we dive into that, I do have one request, which is, if any of you find the information that you hear tonight, if you find it of value, if you'd please share it. So you can find us on Instagram at @wearewaw, and please follow us, tag us, mention us, tell your friends. We really want to be supporting more women. You know, I myself am a small business owner, and I know a lot of you here are as well, and so many times it can feel so isolating. And so to have a group where we can come together, you know, again, and share, like I said before, our challenges and victories and sort of help each other rise, that's what we're here for. So thank you. So now I'm going to sit down.
And we're going to get started with the conversation. So I hate reading bios because I think they're very boring.
Okay.
So what I'd like to start off with is, Tony, for you to kind of just give everyone a little bit of your background and tell us how you got into doing this work on confidence.
Okay, so hello everyone. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
I love this group. I'm so proud of what you have created here. It really is nice when you can find a safe space and women that are like-minded, that you can kind of share your wins, your victories, and sort of commiserate about the tough times, because it can be very isolating as an entrepreneur. So when I find these kinds of groups, I'm like, oh, they're my people. I'm really excited, you know, to be around them and to hear what you're doing and be a part of it. So my background is in public relations. I studied it in college and have been doing it for over 20 years, and really have had a very, very good, exciting, eventful career. And I'm so fortunate to say that I, you know, kind of one opportunity always led to another. I never really had to look for work. I've just always had this sort of upward trajectory career. And my husband and I moved to LA probably, I guess, about 18 years ago. And I started doing freelance work, and then decided I wanted to grow to a company, but I'd never worked in a PR agency. I'd never worked in-house. And so I thought, well, in order for me to learn how to do that, I'm gonna take a really low-level position with a PR agency and just do good work and see how it works. And I did that for a couple of years and then decided to venture out on my own. And that was at the beginning of, that was set in 2007, the beginning of the recession. And everybody was telling me that, don't do it. It's going to be a recession. This is the worst thing that you can do. And honestly, I don't know if it was so much confidence or being just really naive. I was like, recession, smashing, whatever. So I, you know, stepped off and started my company, and we soared. We did really, really well. It was very unusual. I can look back now and say that within the first 4 months of having the agency, we had four major hotels and some really nice small clients. And we were a generalist PR firm, so the lion's share of our clients, we were generalists, so we represented everything from a university that we handled social media for a few years to small construction and design companies that we worked with. But the lion's share of our business was hospitality and tourism. So we had luxury hotels and destinations and spas and resorts and shopping plazas. And it was really great. And for 8 years, we did really, really well. But somewhere around, I think it was year seven, I started not loving what I was doing. But I did not know how to give myself permission to not love it anymore. I had grown this award-winning company. We were in a beautiful creative office space. Everything that I ever wanted in having my own agency. And I was so unhappy. I would lay in my bed at night in the morning and go, I think I'm not gonna go in today. I called my assistant, and she knew me so well. She's like, we've got cough medicine in here. You'll be fine. But that kind of went on for a while, and it got to where I was really annoyed when employees had problems and clients, but you know, they annoyed me. And it was that kind of
no one can
never. I know. It was that thing where, you know, like when you dated a guy and he was really a nice guy and there was nothing wrong with him, but when he blinked, you wanted to punch him in the face. You know, when he breathed, you were like, oh, you know, I just, you know, that's how it was. I was just over it. But I didn't know what was wrong. And I kept thinking, I'll just tweak it. We need to redesign who we are. And I couldn't find that place. And I fell out of love with my business. And I didn't know how to give myself permission to say, okay, pivot and do something different. Mm. So in the midst of that, here's the truth. When you don't love your work, when you're not putting love into it, there's not a whole lot for it to reciprocate. So the business got really strained, which then made me feel even more depressed. And so I started scaling the business back. We moved out of the creative office space. And then I was working from home. I had a handful of clients, and the employees that I had, I moved over to contract employees, and I am feeling like a loser because here I had this great award-winning company, and now I'm not the type that likes to, working at home is so overrated for me. It's very lonely. Mm-hmm. I have this app, my friends laugh at me. Are any of you feel familiar with the Coffivity app?
No.
So it's this app that has the ambient sound of a coffee shop. I play that in my home office with Pandora.
That's amazing.
Shows you how much I don't like being alone. So I didn't like being at home, so I was really feeling like the worst. And I'm walking through the living room, and my husband's watching a documentary about Muhammad Ali. And I'm like captivated. I'm not a boxing fan, but I am captivated by his confidence. And I'm trying to figure out, how did this man maintain his confidence in the face of defeat? Mm-hmm. How did he maintain it when the country hated him because he didn't support the Vietnam War?
Right.
Mm-hmm. How did he maintain it even when he was stricken with Parkinson's disease and couldn't speak? Every image, if you close your eyes and you think about him, is an image of confidence. Mm-hmm. And then a few clips later, I see Bundini Brown, his hype man, his corner man, right before he's getting ready to go into a fight, and he is in Ali's face and he is yelling, reminding him of all of his knockouts, his wins, that he is the greatest of all time, that he is a champ. And my thought was, well, if we all had a hype man reminding us of all of our wins and our victories, then we'd have that kind of confidence as well. So in that moment, I thought, I need to make myself a hype book. I need to just sit down and write out my wins, because at that point, all I could see is all my losses and things that I should have done differently or better, or even my wins looked like losses. We should have won more, you know, just nothing was, I wasn't proud of anything. So after doing that for 2 days, in the middle of my living room floor, I'd cut out pictures and I was just pasting and cutting and journaling in really great detail about the things that I had accomplished. Things like launching the company at the beginning of recession and soaring, and pro bono work that we had done, and then personal things like running the LA Marathon, things that made me proud, not what society says success is, things that just made me personally. within 2 days of doing that, there was this ascension of confidence that rose up in me because I was now looking at myself through my success lens. Mm. And I was seeing myself from a whole different light. And a girlfriend sent me a text message and asked me what I was doing. And I said, I'm making a hype book. And she's like, what's a hype book? And I'm like, it's the best thing ever. It's when you train your success. You write down and really reflect. And she's like, Tony, that's great. Everybody needs one. And I said, I know. You need to do it. I'm telling you, it's the best thing ever. And she's like, no, Tony. Everybody needs one and you need to write that book. Mm-hmm. And so I then wrote the book. It took me 9 months, but wrote this book that's called My Hype Book. And it's a guided motivational journal that walks you through the process of just taking inventory inventory of your wins and those things that make you proud, because I think especially as women, and for some reason especially in entrepreneurship, we can be really, really, really harsh and critical and not celebrate ourselves and not give ourselves a pat on the back. Oh, you know what, I want to do this. So I want you all to raise your hand. Raise it up really high, and then turn it this way. Turn it back so that your palm of your hand is facing backwards, and then pat yourself on the back. So I want you to get in the habit of doing that, because we don't do that. We will celebrate everybody else, but not ourselves. And so this was a process that taught me how to do that, and it has been life-changing for me. So now I have the fun pleasure of tying my work of what I am doing with the book, and that's workshops and things around helping people to just find that confidence that's already in all of us. We all have it. We all have significance, and when we can own that significance, we can walk in greater confidence. But also, my work as a PR person was about building hype and excitement and confidence in brands, and so now I'm bringing that to this. And finding those opportunities that help women tell their stories really well so that they can own that confidence and step into their place in their corner of the world with more authority and grace and, you know, taller posture and confidence.
So I want to ask a question because... And I've written about this, if any of you guys follow, you know, our newsletter or blog. But I am not, I am a victim of being my worst critic. Mm-hmm. How many people today said something negative to themselves, about themselves?
Like today?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take that and parlay into what does confidence look like?
You know what? It looks like you being your best self and you walking your significance. We all are created with a purpose. And most of us know it, or we're in the process of discovering what that is. And the more we own that, and the more we see ourselves in that, the more we are assured about why we're here and what we're supposed to do. It's when we kind of get distracted about what Jenna's doing and what Gail is doing and what Jen is doing, and we focus on that because it looks so fabulous, that we then get all clouded with what, you know, our significance is, and then we beat up on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Or we fall for the trap of social media, where you can create this beautiful facade of a happy, without a blemish lifestyle, and we look at that and then compare our everyday life. I always hired girls right out of college. I love seeing them grow up and finding their potential and just kind of molding them. And they would say, hey, we have to take a social media fast. We have to take a social media break. And I'm like, why do you have to do that? And they're like, because all of our friends they're getting married and they're going to the south of France and they're living these wonderful lives. And I'm like, wait. So you remember your mom's photo album that sits on the coffee table, and it's got that picture of your birthday party when you were in the third grade, and you're at the table and you're blowing out your candles and all your friends are there, and it's such a really happy, happy moment. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, she took a picture of that and she captured that moment. she didn't catch you having the meltdown. Everybody came over for that party because you wanted to wear your tutu with your cowboy boots, you know, and not the birthday dress that she got for you. You can't look at social media as any more than those happy moments that are captured and filtered and fixed, and compare your everyday life to that. So it looks like who you really are, and all of those wonderful things and qualities that you are, as well as your flaws.
Right.
Because those are beautiful, and they make you vulnerable, and they make other people able to relate to you. So they aren't bad things. You know, I have an aunt, two aunts, one who is always telling you, you know, she will say to me, I don't like my children today. Yep. I don't like them. And I've had another aunt who's always like, our children are so, they're so wonderful. They're beautiful. They have, you know, and I like hanging around the other aunt because she's so much
she's more real.
She's
real.
Yeah.
So, and I, because I see her flaws. And I'm like, I don't feel like I have to be away when I'm in front of her, where the other one, I feel like I've got to have it all. You know, so that I don't feel less than when I'm, you know, in her presence. So yeah. I think confidence is also embracing those flaws that we have and those vulnerabilities and realizing they make us whole. We are perfectly imperfect, and that's a good thing to be.
Mm.
It's really hard living an Instagram life. That is exhausting, you know. I don't wish that on anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to social media boot camp today, and I'm exhausted. Okay, so joking aside, something really serious. You know, I want to talk about in terms of confidence, and you know, I myself in the last month have not felt very supported by our country, and it, as a result of, you know, everything happening in the media with Christine Ford, Dr. Ford, Kavanaugh, you know, I had a memory come up that I had completely blocked out from an assault that I experienced in college. And I wrote about it. I don't know if anyone saw the newsletter this week. But, you know, it really made me think, watching her, and I have the chills right now, just watching her and, like, the amount of courage. And, you know, what is the difference? There's that first question. What's the difference between courage and confidence? But watching her, you know, come out and talk about this thing that's really painful. I never told anybody about what happened to me because, you know what, I thought it was my fault.
Sure.
And it wasn't.
Right.
It's never okay for a man to grab a woman by the neck. Somehow I thought that was my fault. So as I move forward in the world, and, you know, my fiancé is here tonight, and he has a daughter who's 13 who will be my stepdaughter. You know, I have a niece who's a year and a half, and I'm thinking to myself now, like, what do I do to make sure that these things do not happen to them? And if they do, that they have the confidence to call out their attacker or to speak up and to help support other women. So you spoke earlier about, you know, Muhammad Ali's ability to remain confident when the country hated him. So how do we now, in the face of bullying, because that's what's happening on a large scale and on personal levels. I know levels for many of you here. I know you've experienced it. I've experienced it in my professional career. How do we stay confident and our best selves in the face of that?
That's such a, you know, it's a tough question because I struggle with that too. I remember, I sit on a board, it's so interesting. I sit on a board for a women's organization, and I never paid attention to the fact that I was the only minority on the board. Never even thought about it. And then the election happened, and I realized a lot of my views were very different than, you know, the women on this board. And they're all lovely, lovely, you know, accomplished people, but I remember sitting in there going, wow, these aren't my people. We really see things very, very differently. And I really like them, but we really see things very, very differently. And I remember sitting there thinking, how can I run out of here? How can I grab my bag, jump over that chair, and run out of here? And I mean, I was envisioning myself just running down the street with my head back, just batting it out of there. And I got on the phone, I called my husband, and I was like, I can't believe this, and it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, and it was because of the comment that, you know, our current president made about being okay to grab, you know, women.
Yeah, right.
And so I called him, and he's like, you need to get off that board. You need to, you know, get out of there. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, they're not my people. And then I got home, and I thought, you know, I can't walk away. I may be the only person that can bring this perspective and the only person that has the courage to speak up and be uncomfortable, because I may be the only one or in the minority of the room to say something about it. And it is to answer your question, it's stepping into those uncomfortable situations, because if we don't speak up, then the loudest voice, you know, the squeaky wheel is what gets the attention, you know, right. Now. And so so we have to allow ourselves to be uncomfortable in those situations. We also have to surround ourselves with people that do share our beliefs and understanding and hear from them, so that we don't feel like we're the ones that off, you know, kilter. Because I was sitting there thinking, is it just me? Or, you know, because all of these women seem to feel that this, majority of them feel that this is not a big deal. But so I think we have to, one, kind of, you kind of find that inner, you know, that guttural thing that just says, you know, pull your socks up and just walk in there and be who you are, own your perspective, and be okay to be the one to speak up and say, you know, how you see things, or even, and not in a confrontational way, but have you thought about it from this perspective? And I got a chance to sit down with a couple of those women and said, you know, have you thought about it from this, or what are your thoughts? And they were kind of, I hadn't thought about it that way, you know? So it's, you know, pulling those people aside that maybe have different views and asking, maybe, you know, look at it from this way, right? But it's not easy to do that. It's not easy, but I think we have to own who we are and the beliefs that we have and be firm in them and unmoving, but also willing to hear other perspectives, because there may be reasons why other people feel, you know, that way. There may be a lack of exposure to anything other than what they've been exposed to. I've seen other things, so I know this thing happens. You know, I know experiences that I've had, and God bless them that they've never gone through it, but shame on them that they think just because that they haven't, that other people, you know, haven't. So it has made me, you know, hypervigilant about not being afraid and not wanting to pull back and cower away when I'm in those situations where I feel super uncomfortable or like I'm the only one.
Right. So you just made me think of a few different things when you were talking about really standing in, like, sort of what you believe in. And, you know, I have made a career at standing out and helping brands stand out and people stand out, which is very scary work, okay? It's most people don't want to stand out. Right. It's easier to fit in. I think it's the absolute wrong thing to be doing right now in business if you really want to succeed and do your best work. I think it's scary, but it's also probably the most fulfilling work you can do. I know what it feels like when I have a vision for something. And I know, even when everybody's telling me, you're nuts, that's never going to work. Nobody's done that before. How do you know it's got? Well, nobody's done it before. That's why it's gonna work. But there are so many areas where I'm not able to do that, you know. So I'm wondering if there is a practice that we can sort of implement into our lives to become more, you know, confident in our own abilities, our beliefs, our values.
So the book is, it's like a journal, and the first seven practices in it are really about just acknowledging who you are And the more you are familiar with that person, as opposed to the, because we give a ton of mental real estate to that negative stuff, the negative stuff we see on the media, in the media, our own self-criticism, all of those things. But if you think about how much time you spend thinking about that stuff versus how much time you spend thinking about the opportunities to pat yourself on the back, usually, you know, grossly imbalanced.
99% I give to the negative.
Exactly. So why would you then think any other way than feel kind of hopeless?
Right.
But when you are constantly playing, you think about it, when you mess up, you will play that record over and over and over again. 5 years later, you're still playing that record.
Yeah.
But when you achieve something, you're kind of on to the next thing, and then on to the next, and then on to the next. But what about if you took a little time to just sit in that and really celebrate it and think about it? If your girlfriend gets a promotion, wins, you know, an account or something, you're like, we got to go out to celebrate. I want to take you for dinner.
Right.
But why don't you do that for yourself? You are doing that because you want to commemorate her achievement. You want to make a moment of it. You want her to remember that. So why aren't you doing that same thing? So I say take a moment, whether it is a glass of wine or going to the beach. Jen is, she's one of my clients. She's one of my favorite people in the world because she will take the time to, we will have a meeting scheduled and she's like, yeah, no, I'm going to hang out at the beach today. And I'm like, yes, you go, girl. But I love that because it is taking a moment to just take it in and be alone and reflect. She said, this is my day, I need to reflect today. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's exactly what we do. And you reflect on the right, you know, sort of thing. So I think that's how. And then deciding for yourself, what is success to you?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What was an achievement? Not what society says. So when I started my company, I decided I was going to make $1 million in my first year. I've always been a big dreamer, big, you know, because I read in like Entrepreneur Inc. magazine or something that's success. So I'm 18 months in. We haven't made our first million, and I am at my desk having, and it's 2008. It's a recession, but I'm still having a meltdown. I mean, like tears in a puddle at my desk, crying. And my girlfriend, who is also my controller, calls the office. She's like, "What's going on?" And I'm like, everybody was right. I shouldn't have started the company. We haven't made our million. It's 18 months in. And she's like, are you effing kidding me? No, I'm serious. And she's like, you have to be joking. You have a thriving company in the middle of recession. People are laying people off in droves and cutting their budgets. And you are thriving. And you're upset because you didn't make a million? Give me a break. And I'm like, you don't understand. I mean, I was really having a meltdown. And so I said, I can't believe you don't get it. And she said, I won't get it. Cry me a river, but you are fine. And then she says, slow your roll, Oprah, you'll get there. So I hang up the phone and we're friends, so I can slam the phone down. She calls me back later on, are you done having your temper tantrum? No, I'm not, but I can't understand. And it became a bone of contention between us for many years. Because I'm like, I can't believe you didn't have more compassion for me. And she's like, and I won't, because you were doing it. You were killing it. And you were too busy looking at everything you hadn't done. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I was sitting in my living room floor, you know, two years ago, that I sat down and realized I didn't even take time to celebrate what I was accomplishing because I was so busy beating myself up for what I wasn't, hadn't done based on what somebody else said success is. What a waste of time. And that became a pattern for my entire history, tenure as an agency owner. We were up against I was always big on, you know, clients pay us checks and that's how they thank us and say job well done. I'd enter industry awards. We called it office bling. I wanted to have office bling awards all around the office, and we had a big wall of them. But one year we were up for a really big PR industry award for a little resort that we represented that decided to dig up their tennis courts and put a family pool and kind of a playground pool. And so we were up against, we entered into this big industry award, and we made it to the finalists. And there were hundreds of people that got into it, made to finalists. And so when we got to the finalists, we were up against a really big, huge, well-known agency. And they were doing the PR for, do you remember when Oprah and John Travolta flew the plane to Australia, took everybody to Australia, and it was kind of a big thing? So it was the PR agency that did that. So it was us and our little resort in Orange County, and them in, you know, what they had, Australia. Right. And, right, and John Travolta and Oprah, you know? And so we didn't win. We came, you know, second. I was pissed. I was so, I'm going to step and repeat with a scowl on my face. And my employees are like, but we came second to, I mean,
to Oprah. Oh,
Oprah. Exactly. Second to Oprah.
Exactly. Right. But I'm pissed. I am not, there's nothing about it that's making me happy. Because I'm mad we didn't win, you know. And it's just this pattern of not being able to find that place of joy where I really should have been celebrating. And I feel bad because I look back now, because I brought my employees down. They could have, you know, it could have been a really nice, lovely time for all of us to be really happy and pat ourselves on the back. But instead, I, you know, drove home with all of us in the car mad, not talking, you know. So so I say that to say that it's really important that you decide what a victory is for you, not what, that was a victory, but I thought that award was the victory, mm-hmm. and winning was the victory, and I should have been more cognizant of what the accomplishment was for us, because we were a little, you know, at that point, five-person PR agency, you know, and they had hundreds of employees and Oprah.
And Oprah.
One thing that this is making me think of, too, is, like, these victories that we're celebrating, they don't have to be huge.
No.
They can be small. There can be something every day.
Yep.
My dad would say to me when I was younger, you know, He just would get so excited about a new idea or a meeting he had, and he'd come home and tell my mom, and my mom would be like, well, like, why are you so excited? You know, like, the deal's not done. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, but, like just being in, like, having the opportunity to make this pitch
right.
was, like, that was a success for
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
And so, like, I do, like, I had a meeting last week with someone that I was like, it felt like a success, mm-hmm. even though nothing's solid coming out of it. I think there will be, but it was just, you know, those times, guys, right? When you do a presentation and you just, you know, you're connecting with the person and you just feel like you're on and they're getting what you're talking about, yes. and they're listening to every word, and it's just like, oh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
So it can, you know, I think they don't have to be these huge milestones of winning an award.
They absolutely don't have to be. I had a girlfriend to call me and she said, I got all the kids in bed and everything checked off my to-do list tonight. That's a win. Heck yeah, it is, you know. So really, it's the small things. It's really, and I especially pay attention to the small things, because those, all those small things, when we stop and we really think about them, they add up to a lot. And we shouldn't wait for the milestones. But again, it's what today made you feel really proud of yourself. And how do you, even if it's just taking a moment to do a happy dance at your desk, or, you know, or patting yourself, or, you know, a air fist pump, just whatever it is, find that way to make a moment of those accomplishments and really count, you know, those small things, because those are the things that help you to understand your worthiness. The more you take account of your wins, whatever size, the more you understand your worthiness. Mm. And the more you understand your worthiness, the more you show up. And the more you're able to show up, the more you're able to ask for and demand what you are worth. And you don't apologize. You don't go in hat in hand. You don't go in hopeful that they'll give you what you, you know, agreed to, or what you've negotiated down. But when you own that confidence, you walk in that, you know, that sort of authority. And it changes things. Think about somebody, who are some people that in your mind epitomize a confidence?
Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama, she's a great one. Who else?
Oprah.
She's a great one. Who else? Who are some other ones?
Sarah Blakely,
yeah. You, something about them, if they walked in the room, you just see it. I remember seeing Barack Obama walk for the first time when he first won, and he was walking down that corridor that where the columns are. Like, he just has this swagger and this confidence that you just, it just makes you lean in. Mm. And the thing about it is, there's a huge difference between confidence and arrogance, because a lot of people are like,
I was going to ask that question. Yeah. Like, yeah. How do you make sure that it doesn't,
if you're
turn
conscious
into...
of it, first of all, you don't have to worry about going.
Yeah.
Right?
You're good,
boo. You worry about that. But confidence makes other people feel elevated. Mm-hmm. And want to be better and lean in. Arrogance makes people want to feel small and push back.
Can you
back.
Think of two people? You just mentioned Barack Obama. I'm just thinking of someone else that might be an example for the arrogance.
Not me.
No. But yeah, when you walk in that authority, when you acknowledge who it is that you are, then,
that's so beautiful. Yeah. Like that idea of the confident person being someone that raises other
people. It raises
people
other people. You do. Yeah. You think about it. They make you want to be better. Mm. It's something about their presence that just makes you want to be better. It can be a little intimidating, but not in a bad way. You want to lead in. You want to be their friend. You want to understand them. You want to have a conversation with them. You're not, you know... You're a little nervous, but it's something about them that just draws you in. Confidence has this magnetic thing that draws, you know, people in, and it's really beautiful. And the more you own who you are, the more you are able, you know, to walk in that, because it's not, you're just being who you are. One thing, my mom, you know, she's passed away now, but my sister and I used to always love her, because my mom was not a person, she was never jealous and she wasn't competitive. She was just cool with herself. Mm-hmm. And we used to always say, we just love that she's just so cool with herself. She wasn't trying to be anything she wasn't. She was just, and everybody wanted to hang out with her. All of our friends, I'd be out of town and I'd call home and my friends were hanging out with my mom. You know? But she was cool with herself. And when we get to that place where we're cool with ourselves, that's where confidence rises up, because nobody can be you but you. Not a single person. Nobody can do what you do. I'm going to read something to you. There's a really interesting, if I can find it, there's a really interesting thing that when I wrote it, I wasn't really, you know, when I wrote this book, it was really kind of just sort of like a download. And then I'd go back and go, wow, that was really
good. That was really good.
But there's one page in the book that asks, what features do I love about myself? Because you can tell me 10 things that you don't like. You know, my hips, my nose, my, you know, my arms are too short, whatever. But what is it that you really, really, really love about yourself? What's that quality? Or what are those qualities? I'm going to ask. Why don't you guys tell me? Tell me a quality that you really love about yourself. And I want you to say it out loud. I want to hear it.
Should we go 1, 2, 3 and everybody say it once? No one's shy?
No.
Or no?
Yeah. We should go one by one.
Wait,
no.
No.
Physical.
Wait, I'll go first.
A physical?
I love my boobs. Sorry. They're nice.
Yes.
My empathy.
Your empathy. No, I want a physical.
Oh, my freckles.
Your freckles. See there? I love that. I love that. Somebody else.
I love my boobs now after surgery.
They're
much smaller.
There's a thing that we don't embrace those things, but we will harp on the crap that we don't love about ourselves. So I wrote, this is what I wrote, when you consider there are no two people in the world that have identical fingerprints, and that your DNA and genetic makeup are composed of a symphony of cells, neurons, and chromosomes that are specifically designed to distinguish you from every other person in the world, it seems unreasonable to ever compare yourself to another. Sure, we admire qualities and characteristics in others, but you are an original creation made for unique purpose, and for that reason, your greatest admiration should begin within. Mm. Right? Right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's because there's nobody else like you. Mm. Even if you have a twin, they're still not like you.
Yeah.
So why not celebrate that thing? Because you are, I mean, if somebody gave you a piece of jewelry, if your fiance gave you a piece of jewelry and he's like,
He did.
He's like, and I made this, that's right, I know. I had this made, there's not another one like it in the world. You would be walking around like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Right. So we're all that. So why not walk around, you know, with our shoulders held back and proud like that, because there's nobody like you. There's nobody that thinks the way you think, that nobody has the life experiences that you have to make up who you are and bring you to the resolve on issues and ideas and things for, you know, like anybody else would.
Man, I feel good right now. Everybody feel better than they did when they walked through the door? I'm serious.
Yeah.
This is all going in.
So I have another question. Actually, this came, again, from a conversation I was having with my fiancé, Edwin. And I mentioned before, he has a daughter who's 13. And, you know, I remember being 13. It was not a good year for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was the victim of, you know, the mean girl syndrome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were having this conversation, and I asked him, because, you know, this talk was coming up, and I said, you know, do you think this has something to do with confidence? Because, you know, he said the things that girls do to each other at that age, boys do not do.
Right.
Huh. So I'm thinking, is it a confidence issue? Does it have something to do? You know, there have been studies, girls are treated differently than boys in schools. They're raised differently. So, like, what can we do? Because I know there's some moms here in the audience. Like, what can we do to grow confidence in young women and girls? Because they are our future. And, like, I know I just want to continue to see women doing bigger and better things.
So I think it's so funny because when I have these kind of interviews, I'm, like, so not a psychologist. I just read a lot of books on confidence. And I found a hack that totally works. And I've seen it work for a lot of, you know, people with, you know, what I wrote. But my best answer to that is you keep being that example.
Mm-hmm.
Our example speaks volumes to young women. The model that we are, the way we handle ourselves under pressure, the way we respond to the negativity that we see, and that doesn't mean we have to be on and, you know, smart and perfect and pulled together all the time, but even showing them our vulnerability.
Right.
That's how you set the example. And then also just reminding her, you girl, there's nobody like you. And usually the bullying comes from a place of insecurity.
Right.
And that person, if anything, we feel sorry for them because that they feel so low in themselves that they would do that. You know, that they would stoop to trying to bring other, you know, people down. Bullying is about pulling you down so that they can step up. That's all that is.
Right.
So giving, you know, young women a real picture of what bullying is, what it looks like, you know, unmasking it and not giving it the glory that it tends, you know, a lot of people focus on the bullying. I mean, we all deal with it all the time, but you have to rise above it. And showing her how to rise above it by seeing that person as they're really, you know, operating on a low level energy, you know, Gail. and just kind of forgiving them for it and moving on, you know, and being really cautious not to surround. When I now am very careful about who I surround myself with. I mean, I was fortunate as an agency not to ever have to represent clients that I didn't like, but now I really represent people that I just love and admire and want to, like, I want them to be my friends, you know, mm-hmm. if that's not weird for me to say that. I want to hang out with them.
Right.
Jen's like, oh God, she wants to be a friend. But yeah, that's that. It's I'm really cautious about who I surround myself with. And so even helping her to think about what qualities do you want in your friends?
Right.
And when you see those qualities that aren't there, then you know that those aren't your people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, move away from them, even if it means just hanging out by yourself for a while.
Right.
I had one friend who's doing such a great job raising her daughter. She told me that her daughter decided, she's 13, and she decided she wanted to go to a camp where she didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I love that. I don't know that I would have done that when I was a kid, you know. But she's, you know, kind of raising them, her kids, in that way that they're learning that independence, mm-hmm. and that you don't have to have a ton of friends,
right?
And they don't have to be popular or unpopular. They just need to be nice, decent, you know, kind, sweet people that treat you with respect.
Right.
All right, ladies, I want to open the discussion to you. And see if we have any questions. I hope there are some, because we have this wonderful person here who is giving us such great information. So are there any questions?
Yes.
I do have one. So in an executive leadership environment, a lot of times women that have confidence are seen as bitchy or aggressive. Mm-hmm. Do you have any pointers or ways where you could still be your authentic self and be confident, but sort of open those eyes to the people that are around the table and not see you as aggressive and bitchy?
Well, some women tend to think that they have to behave that way in order to fit in. I've got a client right now that is she's a county commissioner in the city back east, and she ran for Senate and didn't win, and just kind of plummeted her confidence. And so she's the only female of 5 county commissioners. And she, you know, we'd meet after her meetings with them, and she'd just be so exhausted, and she'd say, and they didn't respect what I said, and I was the only one that voted in this way, and she'd go on and on. So I finally stopped and said, here's the deal. You have a seat at the table. Plant your elbows in, lean in, and behave like you belong there, not like you're in the back trying to get there. Mm-hmm. And they will see you that way. Mm-hmm. You don't have to prove it. Plant your elbows in, lean in, and behave like you belong there. You've earned the seat at the table. You don't have to vie for it anymore. You don't have to prove it anymore. You're there. And when I, you know, told her about that, she kind of sat back and, you know, was almost like an aha moment that she had been feeling like she had to prove that she had to be there because maybe they weren't accepting of her. And I'm like, it doesn't matter whether they are accepting of you or not. You are at the table. So just carry yourself like you are there and let them finally catch on, you know. But don't feel like you have to take on these bitch-like characteristics for people to respect you. If you're a girly girl and all your femininity, you know what, I love that, what's that cute movie with Reese Witherspoon?
Legally Blonde.
I just love that. I can watch that. If that's ever on TV, I'll watch it. Because she brings all of her femininity and her girly to the table.
Yep.
And she's confident in who she is. She knows her significance. And she just shows up. This is how I am, with my pink bows and my eyelashes, and you know, you got a seat at the table because you had enough to offer to get there. And so the more you own it and contribute to that, the more they will respect who you are, because you didn't, trust me, we aren't getting to the table by any favors. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody's doing us favors to get there. So, does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Kim, you had a question.
Yes, I think one of the things that
he's a challenge in this crowded PR marketing space is how to differentiate without making this brand statement about yourself. I'm a little past the millennial stage, I'll say. Mm-hmm. And when I was coming up in business, it was very honorable to stick with things, to build loyalty, to build relationships, to really be of service. Mm-hmm. And now so much of it, as you said, is built on social media and presenting the brand.
Right.
You are your brand.
Right.
I find it in many ways much easier than ever to be myself.
Yeah.
I find it very hard to differentiate because I feel there's a lot of noise. Can you speak to how you have differentiated yourself in a very crowded industry? PR is a really crowded industry, and there's a lot of people now who say you can do it for free if you have an iPhone.
Right, right. You know, when I had my agency, I'm not the competitive type. I compete with myself. I competed with the last thing that I did. So that's all, or I'm competing like with the icons. You know, if funny story. Remember when Oprah first did Oprah Magazine?
Mm-hmm.
And she gave iPads to all of her employees? Well, I was like, well, I'm going to give iPads all. I'm going to do that. And so we worked really, really hard, and I was able to do that. You know, so I want to, you know, I'm like gleaning from the icons. But because I'm not that competitive type, social media doesn't have the effect on me like it, you know, does on some people, which I totally get and understand, especially when you're in the business of creating an image. But what has always made me work is I just am who I am. I don't have the energy to try and be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always very good at finding those strengths and that brilliance within my clients, and let's focus on that. So there's a funny story that I like to tell. My first job out of college, the artistic director loved to do the Henrys, Henry V, Henry VI, Henry VII. Those shows are so boring for me. It was at a regional theater. And I'd have to read the script. I worked in marketing, and I'd fall asleep at my desk trying to read the script. And my boss would say, you know, you need to read that script. And I'm like literally at my desk trying to fall asleep. And I'm like, but I don't like it. It's so boring. Why do we have to do this? She's like, Tony, we have to do it. It's in the program for the year. Find what you really like about it and shout from the rooftop about that. So what we did was they were having this chainmail flown in, the armor that they had to wear in the fight scenes. And so I focused on the chainmail. The chainmail was coming from Europe, and it was really heavy. And this is how much it weighed. So we did a press release about how much the chainmail weighed. And we had media writing about that. And then we talked about how the first time the cast had to try it on and how heavy it was. And we had press come out and talk about that. And then when they did their first fight scene. So it was all of this stuff about the one thing that I found that was interesting about a really, really boring, you know, story, play. So whatever it is that makes you feel uniquely you, you got to hone in on that, mm-hmm. and you tell that story. I'd sit with clients who had hotels and sit with the general manager, and they're thinking about bringing us on, and they boast about how they had, you know, a selection of pillows and dog butlers and, you know, all sorts of, you know, glamorous things, and their sheets had, you know, 1500 count. And I'd say, you know, so there are like 100,000 other hotels that have that same thing. I want to know the personality,
right.
of who you are. Mm. Tell me about that guy that is the ambassador who's at the front desk who's been here for 40 years. Tell me about that massage therapist that really studied, you know, the body and physicality and all of those things. Because when a journalist comes in, I know I'm going to be able to hook her up with them that has an interest in that area. Tell me about that cook that works in the back. Tell me about the personality, the people, the stories, because that's what makes you stand out and you different. It's the stories. It's stories that movies are stories. That's why we go to them. That's why it's such a big, thriving industry, because we want to hear that beautiful story. So telling your story is how you do that. I didn't compete with other agencies. I didn't even know who my competition was. I was like, this is who we are. We were a really fun, creative agency, and so we tell that story. We're really fun and we're creative and we have lots of ideas. And that's how we made our, you know, ourselves stand out. I will say also another thing that comes with when you do that, when you own that, confidence comes from that. We were up for one of our first big destination clients was Orange County. And we were up for bid for that. And the person that invited me to bid on it was Vice President of Marketing and PR at the time. And she said, you know you do great work. You're a really small agency. I think it had 3 people at that time. And she said, but I love your work over the years that I've seen. Because she knew when I worked for another agency. And she says, I'd like to invite you because we've got a budget for PR. Let me let you know you are going up against some other big agencies. And so she's like, but if anybody can rise to the occasion, I think you can. And I'm not the only one making the decision. So I thought, well, okay. So I go home and I'm trying to figure out, what can I do for this proposal? I gotta do something really good. And I'm not really coming up with ideas. And I'm an ideas person. I can come up with ideas. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, it's not really the ideas that I need to find a way to package it. So I felt compelled to go to TJ Maxx. So I go to TJ Maxx and I go to their suitcases and I find an orange suitcase, a hard shell orange suitcase. And in that suitcase, I decide to pack all of the things that I would go on vacation in Orange County with. I got an Angels t-shirt, I got a sand and a shovel, I got flip-flops and shades. I guess all of those things that you would pack if you were going on vacation. I did our proposal and put our proposal in there as well. And I had that delivered. And so our proposal was delivered in this fun, creative, exciting package. So when they got it, they called me right away and said, somebody rolled in the most creative proposal. So we want to invite you in to be the top 3 to bid. So I'm like, okay, great. Then I'm thinking, okay, how do I top that? You know? So we thought it was right when sprinkles had become really popular. And so we got cupcakes that looked like oranges. And then we also thought they were celebrating their 50th anniversary. So we said, we'll take champagne in. And then I'm like, well, we don't want to seem like we're celebrating ourselves before we get it. So let's do mimosas because it's Orange County. So we go in and it's my two employees, they're both young, right out of college, and we're sitting there. The first agency is in there, the second one is sitting there, and then we go in. Now I've got on a red suit, Jessica has on purple and yellow, Jackie's beautiful blonde blue eyes, just gorgeous, has on royal blue, and we have champagne and cupcakes. And we look at the other guys, and it's 2 men and a woman, and they have on gray and navy, and they have their proposals, and they look very serious. And Jackie looks at me, and she says, and then she looks at us, and she looks at them, and she looks back again, and she said, Tony, this is either going to go really well or really bad. And I said, you know, you're right. But here's the thing. We go big or we go home. Mm-hmm. Let's go in being exactly who we are. And if that they don't like that, that's okay. Mm-hmm. We went in being as honorable as we can, being exactly who we are. Mm-hmm. This very lean, creative, fun team that loves popping, you know, champagne and mimosas in the middle of a work week. And so we go in and we do the presentation, and at the end it's like 5 or 6 VPs there and a few other people, and they applaud. And the person that invited me in, she's like, they haven't applauded for anybody. And the president jumps up and he says, you know hospitality, you get hospitality. And we ended up winning the account. Mm-hmm. And so it was me, just us being who we are. We weren't thinking about the competition. Those people did not intimidate me at all, because I can't be who they are, you know.
So I just want to make sure everybody's getting this, because what you're saying is so important. Okay. And I think it's the most important thing. I think it takes a lot of bravery, though, also, is being who you are. That is the most important thing. Just because you're in business does not mean you're not who you are when you're in business.
Right.
That is what makes you different. You have to integrate that into the work you do.
Yeah.
Because that's how you'll be authentic.
Exactly.
You know, you can't fake the stuff. You can't fake a differentiating point.
Right.
It has to be authentic. And I think it's just... it's amazing to me that so many brands don't understand how to integrate personality into the brand, and it's so important.
Yeah. It's who you are. That's the key that allows you to show up confident. Because the phrase fake it till you make it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never been a fan of that.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get the concept. But I don't buy that, and I never did that with any of our clients.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, let's find out what you are really super, super good at and what you do really well, and let's tout that, and let's get that out there. Not try to make you something. And in this day and age, with so many tools and easy way to build a facade that looks like you are really super, you know, big, it can be tempting to do that. It's okay, but you just need to make sure you can back up what it is that you are portraying, because I'm always the one, I'm so afraid to present any more than I am, because I'm the one that, you know, the wizard, when they pull that curtain back and he's just this little man back there, I'm afraid. I have nightmares of, if we put our clients out there to be anything more or greater than they are, then that's a long way to fall.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big, huge fall from grace that really was never, you know, there. But when you show up exactly who you are and all the beauty and the ideas and the brilliance, and when you sit down and you think about the many successes that you've had, the accomplishments, the level of impact that you have on other people's lives, when you start taking inventory of that, you feel like, oh, what? Yeah, I am a badass. I'm a total badass, you know? But because our default is to, you know, you wear a dress and 10 people are like, oh, that's so pretty, you look so thin, oh my gosh, you're gorgeous. And then one person goes, yeah, it kind of makes you look a little hippie. When you go to put that dress on again, you're like, should I? You know, you have a symphony of compliments.
Right.
But you focus on that one person. You know, but it's that thing where you kind of program your brain to, we had an event this weekend,
the bitch lady.
So when the bitch lady starts telling you you're not alive, we said lock her up in the closet.
That's the only time you can chant lock her up.
That's right. Yep. We don't like the bitch lady. The bitch lady, you know, you want your hype woman out there. And another thing, too, is it's so important that you have a hype tribe. So important that you have
a
hype tribe.
That's what this is for.
Yes, exactly. Your hype tribe, though, you want to be really selective, because it's not a given who those people are. So my hype tribe, when I'm doing new adventures and launching, you know, new ideas and being, like, super creative... Not my dad. My dad's the one that'll say, you need to just focus on, you know, just this entrepreneur stuff. No, just get you a good job. Yeah, you can get another VP job with another, you know, he's not my hype tribe.
Yeah.
He means well, but he is not the hype tribe. So I don't share that stuff with him. My mom was definitely a part of my hype tribe. And then you have friends. So you have to put them in categories and be selective of who's your hype tribe and when you're doing this kind of thing, and who's in your hype tribe when you're doing this sort of thing. Because, you know, we all have that friend that's really a good friend and they mean well, but they sort of don't love it when you look like you're raising up above them. Or they just can't find it in themselves to really be happy for you when you're doing well. And they are really still very good people, but there's something... that's not working in their life that they can't celebrate you. They don't need to go in that that, you know, hype tribe. So be very clear about who fits in what categories, and when you share, you know, with them, you know, what you're doing.
Right. That's right. Okay, so it's a little bit after 8, so I want to kind of bring this to a closing so that we have some time to mingle again.
Okay.
I want to first thank Walker Zanger for being such an incredible host. It's such a beautiful space, and we could not have these meetings if it weren't for people like you, so thank you for supporting us. I also know that you have some books here to sell.
I do. Ooh-hoo. Yes, got some books in the back. They're normally 45, but we're doing them for 40 for the WA group tonight. And Leah, my sweet friend, who's one of the, so, you know, I was not lying when I say, you know, I want my clients to like become my friends. She was our client at one of the shopping plazas. She since left from there and, you know, doing my own thing, but we've maintained that friendship. She's part of my high tribe, you know, definitely part of my high tribe. So she, you know, can definitely help in that.
Right.
And then we've got, like, I'm now stepping out into doing some really fun things. In the early part of 2019, I'm going to do what's called the Me Retreat. And it is a 24-hour retreat that's all about you. It stands for my empowerment, but it's 100% about you. It's when you put down the title of wife and mom and girlfriend and aunt boss and all of those things, and you just get hyper-focused on yourself. And we have all sorts of indulging fun stuff that's going to happen, you know, that day. That'll be early in the spring. We'll do this in the spring, or that's going to be in like January or February, but then in the spring we're going to be launching these fun curated for confidence excursions. So they're just fun things that you do that kind of help you feel confident in an area. Like, we'll take the train up to Santa Barbara and then go to a winery, and we'll walk through some of the things in the book. And at the winery, you'll learn about what makes a Merlot, or what makes a cab, and those things that when you're standing around having a conversation, it may not be your area of expertise, but because of the exposure, you just feel that much more confident, you know, talking about it. But they're just things I realize the more exposure that I have, the more experiences that I have, the more I find out what makes me happy, what makes me tick, and I show up more confident. And so I want to do more of those things because they just have a way of making you feel, you know, approved, and really it's self-approval. You know.
Well, please keep us posted so we can keep the members posted.
For sure, definitely.
We can join you for some of those.
Yeah. Wait.
Why don't you, do you want to, like, if anybody wants to get on Tony's mailing list?
I do. I just signed up for Textable.
What's that mean?
So if
sorry, oh my God,
so
I don't know what that means.
So if you text 444-999, then you can get on the email list.
Oh.
Yes.
And then if we already bought a book previously, but we brought it, are you signing
it? Yes, I'll sign it.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, Tony, thank you so much. I wasn't joking. I really do feel better.
Oh.
So I just want to thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. I love working through my book. So anyone here who wants to take a look through it and maybe buy one, I highly, highly recommend it.
Thank you so much. So, thank you. This was great. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I think there's more wine and food now.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you.